I think, first of all, it's important to say welcome back. I can't believe that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur were not enough for you people. But I am delighted, and I'm sure God is pleased, that not only Celine, but also your commitment has brought you here this morning, back to the synagogue, even after the holidays that have passed and the holidays that are about to come. For which, by the way, I think we can indict God as at least a mediocre planner at best, because to set all those holidays together when we've got long stretches of the year when we have nothing seems to me to be what we call in the planning world bunching. And so I was thinking about all the holidays that are stuck together and trying to figure out what it was that they were in some concentrated form trying to teach us, since we've got to be here anyway, and presumably there is a lesson hidden. And I decided that, in fact, since this is in some ways the most important time of the year, it must contain the most important lessons. And in fact, if you remember on Sukkot, what amazing thing happened on Sukkot in Jewish history? I won't trouble you by making you call out answers and then saying, no, I'm sorry, you got it wrong. Here you are, first thing right after Yom Kippur, getting it wrong. It was that Solomon dedicated the first temple. That was on Sukkot. Even though most of us don't know that, we know when the temple was rededicated, which was on what holiday? Chanukah. But it was dedicated on Sukkot. And Shlomo, when granted, remember, one wish, he got one wish. What did he wish for? Wisdom. Wisdom. So surely buried in this time, there is some wisdom about who we are, and who we should be. In other words, how we should grow up. And I think if we start from Yom Kippur and we move through Sukkot, we discover the following. Yom Kippur starts with self-examination. The first way you grow is by trying to understand who you are. And that self-examination is not a new thing. It's true that right now, people are constantly examining themselves, and that psychology and psychiatry have added tremendously to the number of tools that we have with which to examine ourselves. The other night I was told about an author who was interviewed, and the interviewer asked her, "Are you in therapy?" And she said, "Of course I am. I wish to live an examined life," which I thought was a wonderful response. And Yom Kippur is exactly that. It's an attempt to discover who we are, and this is as ancient as human beings. Think about Rachel. What does she say when she's feeling pain? She says, "Im kein lama ze anochi?" If so, why do I exist? And asking yourself why you exist and who you are is the root of self-examination, and without it, you can't understand really who you are or who you are supposed to be. And inside yourself, of course, there are worlds. It's endless. You will never come to the place where you say, okay, now I know myself, I can move on to other things. Inward, as the poet Novalis said, inward is the way full of mystery. Inside of yourself, there are endless worlds to unfold. And on Yom Kippur, we try to build that foundation of who am I, so that I can learn more about myself and the world. And in order to do that, we think about our feelings, we think about our actions, we think about our connections, we think about our sins, we think about our triumphs. And then we move on to Sukkot. And Sukkot is about two opposite themes. One is celebration. It's a chag. V'samachta b'chagecha, you are supposed to be happy on your chag. And Sukkot is a happy and festive and beautiful holiday, full of pageantry and color. And also, by the way, the Sukkah, you know, is one of those mitzvot, mikvah is the other one, where you fulfill it by being completely immersed in it. You can't fulfill the mitzvah of a Sukkah unless your entire body is in the sukkah. If your hand is outside, no good. Now think about it. I mean, when you put on tefillin, or you put on a talit, or you light Shabbos candles, or you say kiddush, almost any other mitzvah only uses a part of you. But the sukkah uses all of you, because you're supposed to celebrate with the entirety of your soul. And so one of the ways that we learn who we are is through immersion and celebration. Anything that you give yourself wholeheartedly to, completely to, whether it be a person or a cause, it teaches you a great deal about yourself. I've told this story before, but it is a perfect example. When Isaac Stern, the great violinist, finished a concert once, and a woman came up to him and said, "I would do anything to play the way you play the violin." And he said, "Really, anything?" She said, "Yes." He said, "Good, then all you have to do is practice 10 hours a day for 20 years. That's what I did." That's the full immersion. Imagine, he is narrow as it seems, how much he learned about himself from being completely devoted to one instrument for so many years. That's the Sukkah. You're completely immersed in it and celebration. So, not only with self-examination, but also in celebration, what makes you happy? What makes you celebrate? What do you want to be completely enveloped in? That also will teach you who you are, but the Sukkah is temporary. The Sukkah will go away. And Sukkot doesn't only teach celebration. It also teaches suffering. Because the lesson of the Sukkah is there is nothing in your life that will last forever. Not in this world. Not even your life. And the pain of that realization, that people whom you love will pass away, that things that you love will pass away, the pain that you feel when you think about your childhood home, which is a combination of joy but also of the bitterness of nostalgia, that's what Sukkot teaches as well. Because you don't only learn about the world through celebration, you learn about the world through suffering, through pain, through the fact that what once was is no more, and that what is will once no longer be. And so both lessons, which are, by the way, both embodied in Kohelet, in the book that we read on Sukkot, which says that you should enjoy your life, that you should celebrate, and at the same time says how much suffering there is in the world. And the reason that Kohelet wrote about both is because he was wise and he told the truth. And then we come to this morning. And in addition to celebration, to suffering, and to self-examination, what do we have this morning? We have the Song of Moses and the Song of David. Now, here's an amazing thing about those songs. The Song of David, and for that matter, Shirat Hayam, the Song of Moshe, that Rabbi Sherman talked about earlier, they're both shorter than the final song of Moses that ends the Torah, of Ha'azinu and Zot HaBracha. It should go the other way, you know. It should be that when you are young, you have more power and vigor and you can sing longer songs, and then when you get older, they diminish. But in fact, here we have an inversion of that, which is the same inversion as the shofar around Sinai. I don't know if you remember, but it says Godel v'chozek ma'od, which means that the sounds of the shofar around Sinai got louder and louder and louder. Now, you and I both know that sounds get softer and softer and softer, except the smoke alarm that was without a battery last night and all night long kept seeming to get louder and louder and louder. But apart from that, sounds get softer and softer. Songs get shorter and shorter. But that wasn't true here. Moshe is teaching that in fact, as your life gets longer, you know more, you remember more, you understand more, your song gets longer and more complicated, and you have more to say, not less to say. Because the last way that you learn about yourself, in addition to self-examination, to celebration, and to suffering, is by self-expression. By your song. The writer E.M. Forster once said, "How do I know what I think until I see what I say?" And he's right. How often have you said, "Oh my God, what I just said, I didn't even know I thought that." But there is so much inside of us that when we get the chance to sing, it comes out, and that song begins when we are very young. When we first hear the lullabies that put us to sleep and encourage us to develop our own songs, and you may know that infants, babies, they do sing to themselves. They make sounds as they're going to sleep. They sing their own lullabies. And that song, as long as we are alive, it never ends. And here we see Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our teacher, in his last moments, singing his longest song. He's gone through self-examination and celebration and suffering, and now he has something to teach us and to tell us. So I really do believe that this time of year, and the fact that we keep coming back to the synagogue, it's because there is such richness in not only what the Torah has to teach, but even in what the cycle of the year that the Torah tells us about has to teach us. There is not a person alive who doesn't understand what it is to look inside yourself, to celebrate, to lose, to suffer, and to sing. But here it is, all in the space of a week and a half or 2 weeks. We build the sukkah. We go inside, we say our blessings knowing that it will be gone next week, and we know something deeper and truer about ourselves and our souls. So, as I said at the beginning, yes, it's wonderful that you're here, but also, it makes sense, because the more you learn about yourself, the more you want to know. We are, all of us, in God's image, which means we are inexhaustible. And for all of our lives, we will search, we will suffer, we will celebrate, and we will sing, which is a long way of saying, Shana Tova. May you have a beautiful, sweet, celebratory, self-examining, a little bit of suffering, and a year that is filled with the song of your soul, the song that the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that our Creator, put us here to sing. Shabbat Shalom.